Here, this in this chapter, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Srimad Bhagavatam, of course, is the postgraduate study of the Bhagavad Gita. Have you read Bhagavad Gita? You looked at that, but you've heard of that? Yes. Bhagavad Gita, of course, was spoken by Krishna 5,000 years ago, and it is the essential religious principles, universal religious principles that can be should be followed by all people of all different countries at any time. The very universal religious principles. Actually, they use that word here. He says here, Ukura says, "You originally enunciated the ancient religious path of the Vedas for the benefit of the whole universe." So the religious principles of the Krishna consciousness movement, they are not meant for just one particular race of people, nor are they meant for just some people at a particular time. The religious principles of the Krishna consciousness movement are actually universal, and they're for all people throughout the entire universe, at all times, at all places. So that that makes that is different to some of the other religious principles. Some religious principles can be sectarian, which means that they are for a particular class of people at a certain time, and other people can be excluded. But Krishna consciousness is not like that. It is universal, and it is something which is easily taken up by people also of all walks of life. It can be followed by children, it can be followed by elderly people, it can be followed by invalids, it can be followed by intelligent people, it can be followed by unintelligent people. The only people who seem to have difficulty following Krishna consciousness is the demons. For them it's... For those who are atheistic, it is... impossible. They seem to have a lot of trouble. just like here, it's described that all the different incarnations of the Lord which appear, they're all in the transcendental mode of goodness. And that means that they are, when the Lord descends in any of his different forms, as expansions from the original form, they're all spiritual by nature. The Lord does not take a material body, although his body appears to be material, because he functions sometimes like an ordinary person in this world. just like Lord Ram. If you saw Lord Ram, of course you would think from first sight that he may be an ordinary human being, because he has two legs, two arms, like that. But of course the activities and the knowledge that is given by the Lord is totally transcendental. So, and the religious principles which are given by the Lord are also transcendental, in the transcendental mode of goodness. So there are different there is the material modes, there's the modes of ignorance, which is there's a mode of ignorance, a mode of passion, and a mode of goodness. They're the three different modes of the material nature. The mode of ignorance, people who live in that mode, as the name suggests, they do not have knowledge. They do not know what is right. They do not know what is wrong. In fact, They usually take that which is wrong to be correct. They're so far in the wrong that they actually take what is wrong to be correct, and they take what is correct to be wrong. They are completely foolish. There's a mode of ignorance. You know that people in the mode of ignorance in this world, they live very unclean, unwholesome, sinful lives. They're totally absorbed thinking that they are the material body and that their type of work is the all in all. And then you have the mode of passion. It is a slightly more elevated way of doing things in this world, but still a very degraded existence. People in the mode of passion, they have some, still there's some ignorance, but there's a little bit of knowledge how to get things done. Such persons usually have very strong, powerful desires to enjoy this world, and they usually accomplish that in different ways. Although because they're in the material world and the results of their activities are temporary, they usually end up suffering. Then there are those people who are in the material mode of goodness who actually have some knowledge. They have some knowledge usually which points towards their own spiritual nature. They're usually religious. They believe in God, that he created all the universes, the material and spiritual worlds. Such people control their mind, they control their senses, they live very simply in this life. So these are the different material modes. Above that, there is the transcendental mode of goodness, which is spiritual existence, which can be, someone can actually live on the spiritual platform even while in this world. They are enlightened in the science of God. They are enlightened in the science of service to God. They understand their own spiritual nature. And they follow transcendental religious principles which are set down by the Lord. As described, according to the various modes of material nature, progressively people find it more and more difficult to follow the Lord's religious principles, or even to acknowledge the Lord, let alone follow his religious principles. So for them it is almost impossible. I know when I drive here on my way to the temple in the morning to come to Mangalarti, the 4:30 a.m. Prayers. And quite often as I come down Toorak Road, you see a lot of young people. And even in winter, these people have been up all night in the nightclubs. And a lot of them, the men like to wear just maybe a t-shirt or a singlet. You can see that they're cold, but they like to look tough, macho. And the women also, generally, they don't wear so much. And you can see them shivering, especially the colder nights. You see that they're very, very cold, but they're trying to look, fashionable. And, they've obviously been without sleep, and some of them will even have to get up, or go to work with very little sleep. They have worked very, very hard for a lot, for their money, and they've probably spent most of that on very expensive drinks. They've spent a lot just to get in the door. So there's a huge amount of austerity, a lot of austerity, a lot of difficulty. And what to speak, when they wake up, there's a hangover, the wallet's empty, they've got to go back to work, It's a lot of austerity, a lot of suffering. But those same people, if you say to them, would you like to come to Mangalarti and sing some prayers to glorify the spiritual master and the supreme Lord? they will say, oh, you know, it's like, you know, that's some sort of torture. You know, that's inhuman to live like that. You know, sometimes they, you know, they make very strong accusations how, you know, the Hare Krishnas are crazy people. You know? They find it very, very difficult to follow religious principles, but the same people go through tenfold austerity, hundredfold austerity in trying to avoid religious principles and breaking all the religious principles. So, although Krishna consciousness is universal, it's of universal application, those who are demoniac, they find it, you know, impossible. Very, very difficult. I think I've told the story once how I won't mention who it was, but someone's mother came to the temple to meet her daughter, and she came here, and when she got here, she was just freaked out. seeing God and his devotees and, you know, smelling the incense, and just totally freaked out, just had a complete freak out. Supposed to meet the daughter, and the daughter was a little late, so she was here by herself. It was just, could not relate to it, and it scared the hell out of her. Scared the heaven out of her. So anyway, later that night, in order to, you know, go somewhere where she felt a lot more, where she could unwind from her experience at the Hare Krishna temple, she went to a topless nightclub, you know, and sort of had a few drinks and, you know, this and that, and then she felt, you know, thank God for that. Thank God for a little bit of normality. Demoniac people, they find it very, very difficult to follow Krishna consciousness. And yet, it is very, very easy, you know, for the devotees, especially in this age of Kali. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has made things very easy, and he has introduced a program of dancing and prasadam. If you see prasadam distribution going on furiously, dancing, chanting, associating with Vaishnavas, hearing, you know, the wonderful pastimes of the Lord, you know, visiting the temples and addressing the deities and, you know, deity worship. Very, very wonderful, very beautiful and enjoyable program. Compared to everything else that's going on in the material world, you know, what we have as devotees is such a pleasure. So that is being presented by the grace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So previously, it's described here that whenever that the path of religious principles was obstructed by wicked persons who follow atheism, the Lord would assume one of his incarnations. So in most circumstances, the Lord would actually just annihilate those who didn't follow religious principles. If there were some demons promoting atheism and teaching others to follow that, then the Lord would incarnate and kill that demon and all their followers. And that was the end of the story. And those then who remain quite happily followed the very nice, wonderful Krishna consciousness program that was chalked out by the Lord. In this day and age, of course, the Lord doesn't do that. In Kali Yuga, if the Lord were to kill all the atheistic persons, then I probably wouldn't be sitting here speaking. For starter. So You know, from our very births, generally, many people are brought up by their parents, you know, just taught atheism. You're taught that people who believe in God or, you know, follow religious principles or some sort of weird fanatics, crazy people who, you know, just can't get things together, rejects, and that, literally people's parents, the educational system, the media, the government, friends, relatives, society, everyone is teaching how to be an atheist, or how to believe in God and act like an atheist anyway, or how to, join some religious group and follow some atheistic doctrine. These things are rampant in our society. And if the Lord were to kill all the demoniac persons and all the atheistic persons, there would be hardly a soul left on this planet. So that is the extreme mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that in this most degraded age, when people are most atheistic, most sinful, most foolish, most irreligious, most, against God, out of all the different ages, the Lord assumes his most magnanimous incarnation, and instead of coming with the weapons of his disc and club, he comes with other weapons. He has his ISKCON bullets, gulab jamuns. And you see, we're getting ammunition now for the bazookas and the cannons. So this prasadam is a very deadly weapon against the demons, because it destroys, it's so very powerful. It destroys their atheistic mentality. And we see that, especially over many years, you will see that I've seen personally, just about every devotee who's over the course of time. Some people you go to, and you may they'll see that you're a Hare Krishna, and they just become very inimical just for the fact that you're a Hare Krishna. You haven't said anything to them, you haven't done anything to them. They just all of a sudden hate you. And but somehow or another, just wearing them down with prasada, and over many years, the next thing, they're devotees who love Hare Krishna. And hearing the holy name, the chanting also, very, very powerful weapon against atheism. There's one devotee in he used to be in New Zealand, and when the devotees used to pass by having Harinam Kirtan, he would be yelling at them and spitting at them and throwing his beer cans at them. And he later became a devotee, just constantly hearing the chanting, taking prasadam. He later became a devotee, became temple president. It's about. So you see that prasadam is very, very powerful, and the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So these are the weapons of the Lord, and the Lord's devotees also. The Lord's devotees. As Prabhupada says that only a crazy person can be envious of a devotee. So sometimes people, they're innocent, and that they've had some bad brainwashing, and therefore they see devotees, and that they're inimical and they're sort of cynical and sometimes hateful. But generally, when they get to know them, if they speak to them, if they speak to a devotee, say hello, you know, a little bit of interaction within a very short time, those devotees generally melt their hearts. And the only ones who don't fit into that category, as Prabhupada says, who remain inimical, they're just crazy. People who are inimical to devotees, that is, you know, the only reason. Otherwise, why would someone be inimical to a devotee? The devotees, they have the welfare of every living entity on this planet within their heart. From all different human beings, all different races, the devotees, they do not discriminate, they treat everyone equally well. All races, all ages, all people, all living entities, right down to the little ants. And the devotees spend their entire lives literally dedicated to the welfare of others. They go out of their way, they, you know, avoid sleeping, they reduce their eating, they sometimes travel in very austere circumstances, just somehow or another, without any profit, personal profit, but just for the welfare of other people. So for someone would have to literally be a crazy person in order to be inimical to the devotees. And but although the Lord is very kind and he doesn't actually kill the devotees, the demons in this age of Kali, still people have to be very, very careful. If they do, if crazy people do become if they particularly harass devotees, the Lord will show that side of his nature, even in this age of Kali. There's a famous story with Hridayananda Maharaj, and he was distributing books with another devotee out on Harinam book distribution, and someone came up and was harassing that devotee that was with Hridayananda Maharaj and really harassing him quite strongly. And Hridayananda Maharaj said, you better be very careful, because the Lord is very protective of his devotees. You'll get a very severe reaction if you keep doing it. Anyway, he just kept harassing this person. And then that person sort of just stepped back off the sidewalk just for a second, and this, I think it was a bus, boom, cleaned him up. That was the end of him. For 1 second. instant reaction. So, sometimes, obviously, the Lord bewildered his intelligence just for that split second. He just sort of stepped back off the sideboard. Bang. And the Lord is very protective. I remember the first Harinam that ever went on. I joined here in Melbourne, and then the next day I left with Ramai Swami on his bus, and we were going to travel around Australia, chanting Hare Krishna, distributing prasadam. We had a busload of all the weapons. That was our armoured vehicle. And we got to Adelaide, so we spent a couple of days there. So on the third day, as a devotee, I went out on my first Harinam. And so they shaved me up, gave me a dhoti and everything like that. And Garuda was the very, very blissful devotee, very wonderful dancer, very wonderful. A devotee always seems to be, he seems to be, somewhere in Vaikuntha, yet his feet are walking around here. And anyway, he was blissfully leading kirtan. We were going through the streets of Adelaide, and we're on sort of a narrow path, and at the end of the street there was a hotel on the end, on the corner. And all these rednecks sort of started hanging out the windows and coming out the doorways, blocking up the path, and standing there with their tattoos and their muscles bulging, and looked like they're ready for a showdown. And well, there's about half a dozen of us, I think, skinny little brahmacharis, you know. And Kamala Kanta was there as well. Kamala Kanta may have been leading at that stage. And he was playing Madanga. And he broke into the Nisringadev prayers, because we could all see what was coming. We were going to get down there and they were going to, you know, jump us. So he started singing the Nisringadev prayer, so we all started singing the Nisringadev. And you could see, as soon as we started that prayer, like I was watching them, you could just see the fear just almost like washed throughout their bodies. It was just like they changed within a second. These, you know, there's like a whole pub full of them, all these, you know, big tough men. And as soon as we started singing the prayers, you could just see they all become fearful. And they started backing into the doorways and pulling their head in the windows. And as we come through, you know, they got off the path. Not a word was spoken. They never said anything. And I knew then, you know, that was, I thought that was the Lord's, you know, giving me an understanding that, you know, you go out on Harinam, you be a devotee, and Krishna will always protect you. And which was interesting, because when I actually joined up, I came here and after a kirtan, I followed the kirtan back, and the Maharaj said, I'll get you some prasadam. I'd read about prasadam. So I thought, oh, you know, I'll have some prasadam, you know, just because I knew you'd taken the Lord's remnants. So he went into the kitchen, he brought out a couple of very well fried pakoras. There really wasn't much there. There was, you know, probably most of the devotees these days wouldn't eat them. I mean, like, you know, they'd been there since the morning, they were well overcooked half them. Anyway, I ate them because I knew that was the Lord's mercy. And I said, look, I'll go home, I'll get my stuff, I'll come back tonight. He said, no, I'll drive you home tomorrow and you can pick up the stuff then. Probably think I'm going to fluke already. So he drove me to my place in Dramana. And I went and I said to my mum, I'm joining the Hare Krishnas. And of course she just sort of screamed. And the first thing she said was, Danny, do you know that people chase those guys down the street with baseball bats just wanting to kill them? That was her impression of the Hare Krishnas. She was terrified that I was going to, you know, just be, you know, beaten to death every day just because I was Hare Krishna. Of course, in those days, it was, you know, she wasn't too far wrong. And so anyway, I went in and grabbed it. I filled up, you know, a bag full of clothes and came back and jumped on the bus. So it was interesting that, you know, within 3 days the Lord gave that understanding that, no, you don't have to worry about the baseball bats. And so generally, you know, in this day and age, the devotees are very kind to everyone, the Lord is very, very kind to everyone, but at the same time, if some crazy persons are particularly inimical and do harass the devotees, then the Lord will you know, very quickly and very powerfully protect the devotees. So I won't say much more on that. There's no purport. Just into one verse. Did anyone have any comments or questions? Or, you know, pastimes or stories? Or wanna anything related to that topic? Anyone ever had any close calls with?
I've had many.
What's that?
I've had many.
Anyone tell us one? Well, as a devotee, like, you know, Adam.
Nah, but I've been very close to being beaten many times.
Right.
It's a Christian that's saved.
Okay. Yeah. Well, your parents were devotees, right?
Yeah.
So Krishna's looking after you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I used to chant every day. I put myself in some pretty bad situations.
Yeah.
Intoxicated and whatnot. And I remember one time my right next to me got 5 teeth punched out.
Right.
And I didn't get hit once, and I was pulling the boys off him, you know, and then they hit me.
Uh-huh.
And another time in Lisbon, I think he was number 5 in Muay Thai in Australia at one stage.
Uh-huh.
He lost it, I think. And somehow I just didn't, you know, he threw the table at me and I didn't get hurt at all. He actually hit me once. And I didn't feel anything for it. And then he got dragged out the door by his girlfriend, you know. And he was screaming, wanting to fight me, you know. It was a very close call.
That's okay. Actually, a lot of devotees also who originally preached in the some of the very dangerous parts of the world, some of the, you know, especially when communism was a lot more heavy on the devotees. You know, if someone was a devotee, they would be thrown in jail, beaten, tortured. Some of the devotees, you know, did suffer to some degree, but it's no doubt that you know, they were their destination was very favourable after death.
My stepfather had a suitor and a few other devotees many years ago. In the early days, probably 23 years ago or something. They were up and walk somewhere in northern Queensland, selling paintings door to door. And the police had found out that they were selling paintings, and they just must have been, you know, angry policemen.
Right.
So they got them and they drove them way out to the bush, and no houses, and they said, "We're going to kill you and marry you, and no one's going to know." I can't remember the story, I don't know how they actually got out. I think they ended up getting locked up for a while, but J.O. Silver was freaking out, and he thought they were going to kill them and marry them, you know.
Mm.
Somehow they
let them go. Of course, the devotees have to be a little careful. Although the Lord protects his devotees, they have to be a little careful that devotees can't be blasé or reckless. Devotees can't be reckless and at the same time feel that they're protected by the Lord. I'm not saying in that case, but I know one time when I was in New South Wales, we were selling candles in those days. And so I was in a supermarket. There was myself and the Sringer Prashad, I think his name was. So I was in a supermarket. I had all the checkout chicks, you know, they were all buying candles. So I was like big sale, you know. I brought in boxes of them, they were all picking them out. And the next thing is about 3 or 4 policemen walk in and say, "You're breaking the law." And I said, "Well, what am I doing?" They said, "We're going to book you for obstructing pedestrians in the footpath and blah, blah, blah." Just a whole lot of things. So, you know, I said, "Well, I'm just a salesperson. I'm just, you know." They just picked me up off the ground, picked all my candles up, and threw me in the paddy wagon. And there I found the Sringa Prashad as well. So then they took us to the jail, and you know, they were asking for fingerprints. I gave fingerprints, and you know, they put your name. So I just cooperated, and you know, they locked me in one cell. And then the Sringa Prashad, who was a little bit arrogant with them. You know, they'd ask him for fingerprints, they'd ask his name, and he wouldn't tell them. So then I heard them, they took him into the next cell and they beat the daylights out of him. So, you know, it's not funny. But we can't be, you know, devotees can't be blasé or, you know, arrogant or intolerant. And at the same time, just expect that, you know, the Lord will immersible. Then from there they actually took us to a big prison, and they threw us in a big prison with all the real, you know, major convicts. And the Sringa Prasad, he was saying to me, when you get into the prison, whatever you do, don't speak to anyone. So anyway, he sat in a corner in a bit of a huff, you know, and I'm personally thinking, boy, you're asking for it, you know. You're just sitting there, you know, I'm not talking to any of these convicts or anything like that, and I'm thinking, oh, you're going to get another hiding if you're not careful. But I was quite friendly. I was just, you know, they were coming, I was just talking and telling them Hare Krishna and that. And I never had any trouble, though. They were quite friendly. But we have to be a little bit careful at the same time. But, you know, if there are, you know, if a devotee is working very, very hard for Krishna, and, you know, there's some little accidental negligence or, you know, momentary lapse of intelligence, Krishna will certainly protect them. But if a devotee has you know, a constant attitude of arrogance and intolerance, and somehow expecting the Lord's mercy, the Lord will be merciful. He may, you know, give them a bit of a slap just to help them get rid of that intolerance and help them develop some humility and what have you. Any other questions or comments, stories, past ones, occasion? No?
Can I just ask the two factors, if I'm going a little bit longer, if that's possible, because around about half of you are
on the
night.
I can tell you some more stories.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I'm not going to bore you. it's a pity we're taping this. Probably. Okay. That should be okay. I know one time when we were doing Sankirtan, I think it was somewhere out the back of South Australia, and I was with Prahlad Buck, I think it was. Big, tall devotee. He was a big, big devotee. And, of course, in those days, we used to wear, you know, wigs, because it was just what all devotees did. And which is, you know, always unusual, because when people talked at you, they sort of looked at you forward. You know, it was really awkward. You knew, you know, it was really embarrassing. I started wearing a hat. I think Keshav, you know, used to wear a hat as well. But that was the worst part. People were always looking above your eyes like that, you know. Anyway, the hat helped. So we used to do the hotels. We go into the hotel selling candles, and so we both went into this hotel, and they had those cubicles where a little table in the middle, and they sit each side of the table. So I had my candles on the table, and I was making a few sales, and Prahlad Bhakti was a little further up, and he was making some sales, and all of a sudden one of the guys that was with me noticed that I was a Hare Krishna. He said, "Hey, he's got a wig on. He's a Hare Krishna," with a few other colourful words in it. So they all stood up, you know, just like right along, you know, get at him. So the guy that was with me, he went to grab my hair and King hit me. Right? But when he grabbed my hair, it came off in his hand. He actually hadn't noticed that I had a wig on. And so, for one split second, he was like that, which gave me just enough time to grab my box and run. So he's like that. And, you know, and Prahlad Bhakta, he was also there. He managed to squat someone on the nose with a candle, which really hurts. Anyway, he ran out, jumped in the car, started it up in about 2 seconds. All these guys pouring out the pub, swearing and yelling, you know, trying to chase us. And zoom, you know, off we went, off to the next pub. of course, you know, sometimes you get away with it and sometimes you don't, so I'll say too. That was in Brunswick. That was a time where we used to, when we went out on Sankirtan, we used to always go out with a partner. Especially in the early days, it was just unheard of to go out by yourself. No one went out by themselves. Always went out with a partner. And you always, you know, you did the same street, you know, one each side. You know, you always knew where each other were. You looked after each other because it was a little bit more dangerous in those days. And so on this particular day, my partner didn't want to go out in Sankirtan, and I didn't have another partner, so I went out by myself. It was probably the first time I've done it. And I was in Brunswick, and you know, doing the hotels as usual. I went into this one hotel, and I was doing very, very well. And I had a jacket on. I was sort of putting the money in my jacket, and then as people asked for candles, I'd go out to the car, bring some candles in, you know, sell them like that. So after everyone was finished, literally nearly everyone in the hotel bought, you know, one or two candles. And I went out to the car, and there was a panel van. You opened up the back. I was looking, putting my box of candles in, and someone come up and tapped me on the shoulder, and I thought, oh, they want another candle. So as I went to turn around like that, one person sort of grabbed me by the shoulders and kneed me in this thigh, which sort of made me go like that. And as someone did that, someone went smash with the, you know, a bar or like a wood or something. It was pretty hard, knocked me out. That knocked that tooth out, and cut my nose. I had my face, just my whole side of the face. My lips were out here. My nose was cut. My black eye, so tooth. Well, I went down. I hit the ground, and I went unconscious just as I hit the ground. But as I was falling, I could just sort of see these 2 feet running away, and they were so professional, these guys, that before I hit the ground, I felt the hand go into my pockets, grab the money, and off they went. You know, they're like real professional. But in one sense, they did do me a big favour, because that tooth that I had half a tooth there, and it would have been one that was very difficult to get out. Because no, it was sort of just in the, they would have had to cut it out because it had sort of broken off. And so Krishna had arranged to take it out. Didn't actually hurt. It looked pretty bad, but it didn't really hurt that much. But so anyway, that was Krishna doing me some favour there. So that was, I remember I came back to the temple, and I think I got one day off Sankirtan. I was more worried about going out of my face, something like that. next 2 days later, I was back out at the same time. But sometimes you get caught. But I think I actually should have been killed at that stage. They hit me so hard. I think actually at that point I probably should have died. And so although it was you know, something very serious, I think Krishna reduced that down to just knocking out that half a tooth and, you know, a bit of a black eye. Whereas, you know, my normal karma, because I'm, you know, spent my life following atheistic principles before being a devotee, I should have been dead, you know, much worse. So sometimes, even for devotees, sometimes things happen, but it's just a, you know, tiny, tiny little fraction of the punishment that perhaps, you know, that they may have coming.
Okay. The two stories that I've told you, the first one, yeah, is two boys who knocked my mate's teeth out. They used to fight me because I was a Hare Krishna.
Right.
I wasn't dressed in cloth, had long hair, had neck beads on. Like, okay. They say, why are you wearing neck beads? I'm a Hare Krishna. Why are you a little girl, isn't it? There's a little Hare Krishna in there. And you as well out there, and always knowing so well. And so previous to that day, already, you know, one time one had punched me in the nose, and the other time one had headbutt me in the nose and headbutt me in the eyebrow. Two different occasions, and then a third occasion, I think they'd been warned by an older devotee
Right.
To leave me alone. There was a big argument one time. I wasn't there, there was a big argument. They should leave me alone. And it was, and then my mate was teeth punched out one night. And the other time, the time of Brisbane, I got the table thrown at me. I was actually subtly preaching to this fella, you know.
Right.
And I just touched a nerve. I touched a few nerve spots of his childhood or something, you know. Just to, so you've got to be very careful.
Yeah.
Who you're preaching to and how you feel about it.
Yeah, some people, there's a lot of crazy people. I tell another story about, just a quick one, how, again, on the theme that, you know, Krishna protects you, but if you're a little bit negligent, then, you know, sometimes Krishna teaches you a bit of a lesson. I was doing sankirtan with a devotee who is somewhere in New South Wales, and we're driving. In those days, we never used to stay in caravan parks. You know, when you did sankirtan, you found a river or the ocean. It was unheard of. You know, it was only after a long time that devotees started staying in caravan parks, and that was only the ones that actually were doing huge amounts of collection. But nearly all the devotees, they didn't, and especially the men. Anyway, we were looking for a river and we found this lake. So we're driving up to this lake and it was sort of very flat, so there wasn't like a bank, it just sort of it just went into the lake, just a smooth plain. And I said to the devotee who was driving, I said, if you go any closer, you know, we're going to end up in the lake. He said, nah, we'll be right. I said, it looks slippery to me. Ah, we'll be right. So anyway, you know, he goes a little bit further and then the car just started sliding and it just didn't stop and it just slid into the water, you know. So we went straight into this lake, car filling up, you know. We managed to get all our sleeping bags and that and get out on the bank. Pitch black, it was dark. Middle, you know, very late at night. Anyway, those two wandered off since they had something to do with getting us in the lake, and I stayed there to mind the car. And they eventually got a farmer who dragged us out of the lake. So a little bit of negligence there. Yeah. Any other? I've got a lot of stories, but I've got no time. How are you going with it?
Let me just a little look. Even though you're doing this work to be temporary and getting off the life to surrender to Krishna, sometimes we feel that we should also do something in life. So, like some of our responsibilities or our failings, so how do we, you know, still keep up doing Krishna consciousness and have, is that one of the offenses, like keeping the material attachments?
We shouldn't keep material attachments, but you know, we certainly have to. We should not. Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur explains quite strongly that we should not be negligent in so-called material affairs. Right? If we're maintaining our body, protecting ourselves, and you know, our family, those things which we're using in Krishna's service, if we're doing those things so that we maintain a wholesome platform of Krishna consciousness, that is proper. That's proper renunciation. If we neglect our body, neglect, you know, those possessions which we have, which we're should be using in Krishna's service, neglect, you know, the friendships or relatives who are actually favourable, that is all not good. That is all false renunciation. So yeah, we should not be negligent. You know, we should not be negligent saying, oh, this is a material thing and that is a material thing. We should first look, if this particular thing, whether it be a relationship, whether it be, you know, possession, whether it be my own body, if this is used in Krishna's service, then I will not be negligent with it. I'll be very careful with it, very protective of it, like that. And of course, try as we may, we still need the Lord's protection to help us to maintain those things. Because if we try and protect something, we try and maintain something, whether it be our body or something else, without the Lord's protection, we will not be able to maintain our body, our possessions, our relationships. So, you know, we're completely dependent on the Lord, but at the same time, we act as though we're independent in one sense. In the same way, Arjun, you know, he was completely dependent upon Krishna in the battle of Kurukshetra, but Krishna wanted him to act as if he was literally, you know, going to win that battle independently, like that. So we sort of, you know, we act as if, you know, we are responsible, but our consciousness is that we know that without the Lord's grace, all my actions will be useless. So that should be there. Yeah.
But why will we be doing our responsibilities? Then Krishna also in the Bhagavad Gita says, I need unalloyed devotion. So we are getting entangled somewhere when we are doing responsibilities.
Now, well, that is unalloyed devotion, just like, you know, in the case of Arjun, you know, that he would have to, you know, it wasn't as if he was always with Krishna offering him personal services. Sometimes he would have to be looking after his chariot in the same way that we look after a car. Sometimes he would be looking after his relatives, you know, doing all the different things that we need to do to maintain our profession and our occupation. He was doing all those things. But because it was all dovetailed in Krishna's unalloyed service, therefore it is non-different from pure devotional service.
So that's complete surrender.
That's complete surrender, yes. Yeah. We should not be negligent in those things which... We should not falsely claim things as material which can be used in Krishna's service. And if we falsely claim them as material and are negligent towards them, that's not surrender. A story to illustrate that is Gaura Kishore Das Babaji, who's known for his extreme renunciation. He's known as renunciation personified. So one time there was a devotee who was watching Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji, you know, associating. Someone came and gave Gaura Kishore Das Babaji some coins. And so Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji got those coins and he tied them in the corner of his dhoti, like that. And then he was preaching and chanting, but he would be checking, you know, to make sure that they were there. And then someone also came and gave him a very nice chadar. And he put that chadar, and so he kept it very clear for him. Now this person who was watching Gaura Kishore Das Babaji, he went away and said that I'm not going back to see that Babaji because he has material attachments. I was watching him, how carefully he was looking after the money and how carefully he was looking after that chadar. So I think it was Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati who explained to him that Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji kept them very nicely because everything that he was given like that, he always gave to other Vaishnavas. He never considered himself a Vaishnava. He kept them, and then the first opportunity he would distribute to those who he thought were very nice Vaishnavas. So he looked after them very carefully. Not because they were his possessions, but because they were going to be used in Krishna's service. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati told that person that someone who artificially neglects things which can be used in Krishna's service is actually showing their lack of love of God and their lack of devotion. They think that they're manifesting great detachment and love of God, but actually they're revealing their lack of love of God. Alright, so we'll leave it there. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.